You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
The reading from Psychology Today by Dr. Tara Brach. My religion is kindness. So, what blocks us from cultivating these capacities of kindness, compassion, and empathy? We spend many moments of our day in a trance that arises from the perception of separateness and a feeling that something is wrong. This experience gives rise to the emotions of fear, shame, and anger. We begin to awaken from the trance when we notice the patterns of thoughts and emotions that keep us feeling separate, unsafe, and deficient. You might take a few moments to reflect on several encounters you've had recently. As you scan each, notice if you wanted to appear in a certain way. To prove anything. Sense if you wanted to get something such as approval from that person. How did you want that person to experience you? Were you trying to avoid being judged for something? Was there an underlying belief that you were inadequate or that the other one was threatening you? Were you trying to get that person to be different in some way? What was the quality of intimacy in your interaction? Perhaps you find that you were fully present. Rather than wanting anything from that person, rather than wanting to protect yourself or for that person to be different, you were just attentive and available, appreciating the moment and the person. What was the quality of intimacy in your interaction? As we deepen our longing and our commitment to waking up our hearts, the first step is noticing with curiosity. What's my pattern? Is there an agenda? Are there beliefs that keep me feeling distant and endangered? If there is a gentleness and an interest in your inquiry, whatever is revealed will guide you in becoming increasingly present with others. When we are together paying attention, the most basic and profound expression of love, in a moment when you offer attention, real listening, real presence, in that moment the heart naturally opens. This is the most basic training in awakening our hearts, mindful attention, just being there. It often starts with being aware of our own experience, and that extends to the capacity to offer our attention to others. When we arrive in this space of presence, we come home to the intrinsic caring that expresses our deepest nature. Like the Dalai Lama, we discover, my religion is kindness.
Thank you, Meredith. So this is the second installment of a series of connected services in our annual month of observance, which this year focuses on developing a reflex of kindness to all others. Do not worry if you weren't here last week, because you can always catch up through our podcast site, where we post recordings of all our services. The podcast site is also linked to our website. If you do check out the website and the podcast site, you'll discover in greater detail why we do these months of collective spiritual practice, the many traditions that inspire them, and the neuroscience that supports the idea that you become what you do regularly and with attention. The mind, we know, is a conglomerate of progressive evolutionary developments. Bursts. The old brain enables survival functions like fight, flight, fear, and defensiveness. The newer brain enables us seeing ourselves in others, rewards us when we make connection, and enables empathy. Both the urge to fear and defend and the urge to seek and connect are innate and useful, but one has become better developed over longer time than the other. No prizes for guessing which one. Spiritual practices such as we've been attending to this month have been a time-tested way of reconditioning the mind to privilege the part more geared to connection, to counterbalance the defensive reflexes of the old brain. You could say, therefore, that all spiritual practice has been an attempt to evolve further into that higher, more advanced, and uniquely human side of ourselves. To do that, we have to think about our thinking, which is something only we humans are uniquely capable of doing, and making better choices regularly, so the brain becomes trained, rather like a muscle. Hence this annual observance when we, as a whole church, focus on a common spiritual practice to do together. Or at least that one time of the year when members pretend to humor their minister. That's okay. I know from years of acting that you fake it until you make it. Pretend and it becomes a habit. This year, we're trying to help and encourage each other toward practicing more abundant kindness, random acts of kindness, kindness to people outside your normal social networks. We gave out then and today these sheets of paper where we suggest ways we might practice random kindness and asked you to choose one or come up with your own. And we handed out these wristbands as reminders. Who's got their wristband on today? I'm just thinking, hey, okay, not bad. We noticed last time that kindness has been pretty conclusively shown by research in the British Medical Journal to spread virally through social networks. Kindness is a virus. If you're kind to one person, they will tend to be kind to four others, and those four others to four more each, and so on and so on. And thus, we get the benefit of living in the social networks we help create. And so kindness's viral spread becomes a kind of karma. Ultimately, we all reap the social networks we sow. The charts up there, the blue dots in the 1996 survey represented predominantly negative feelings of anxiety, depression, and unhappiness. And through the control group practicing kindness over a four-year period, it was discovered that those networks sum total of negative feelings lessened. So this is a longitudinal, data-driven study that shows this. So we noted that the practice of kindness, quite apart from the Dalai Lama's endorsement, is also a way to complete yourself as a human being, with the capacity not just for self-actualization, but self-transcendence. Moving beyond a focus on self alone toward a larger purpose outside yourself. Maslow improved his famous hierarchy of needs later in life to include self-transcendence as a genuine human need. And the prayer of St. Francis we heard earlier expresses this same notion, finding that larger purpose in serving others, a purpose St. Francis caught like a virus, from a certain Nazarene prophet who discovered that loving your neighbors is a way of transcending yourself and thus partaking in that which transcends all selves, also called God. We all will have our own struggles, of course, our own pain and challenges and fear, but if we want to be better, if we want to feel better, if we want to heal ourselves, we've got to get out of ourselves, letting goodness flow like a river from us to enrich others. Why should I have to sell this? Why does it seem so hard, such an imposition? Why do we sense resistance even in our own hearts? Well, no river that I know, flows straight and even, and there are a few obstacles to its flow. To practicing more abundant kindness, I want to flag today. First, Asking church people to practice random kindness must seem like asking the residents of Darwin to perspire. Like taking coals to Newcastle. Not much of a challenge, or at least an invitation to complacency and self-satisfaction. Bah, go to church. I'm nice to people. I give to charities. I do enough. Leave me alone. Would you be surprised? You see a woman berating her cleaner, passing a homeless man on the street with indifference, fat-shaming a work colleague with another employee, hating on a gay couple there, I believe, ignoring a starving dog, and going to pray on a Sunday. Church people aren't automatically kind by virtue of their presence in church, and aren't statistically more kind relative to the general population, by the way. In fact, anybody who's been involved in church communities for any length of time might seriously wonder if church doesn't exist just to provide the perfect cover and camouflage for unkindness. Just going to or belonging to church doesn't make you a kind person any more than standing in a fancy garage makes you a fast car. Nor, of course, and I'm including myself in this, nor does the role of ministry confer a general saintly benevolence on a mere human being. I recognize in myself that kindly love for others is hard to dissociate from another pitfall. Self-love, self-aggrandizement, something we came to know as fish love from a story from Rabbi Torsky last week. Love that's about receiving rather than giving. I'm going to depart from my script to tell you a little anecdote that the apple is significant to. When we had our old bench out the front, the one from the original church that was mysteriously stolen and nobody noticed for a month, before John provided this excellent handmade bench outside gratis to us, it used to be a favorite place for people from Warrenilla across the street, the sort of drug and alcohol drying out clinic, to stop off if they wanted a cup of coffee or a sugar rush in the morning. And when I was first in this ministry and just so eager to do good, you know, just so eager to like make myself into the good man I always thought that I could be, one of them rocked up one day, a guy named Warwick. We had a long talk about 8:30 on a Sunday morning before church, and he told me he had, to use his phrase, he had the paranoid schizophrenia, and so he was, you know, fighting to get off drugs and alcohol and that sort of thing. So I made him a cup of coffee, real strong, two sugars, you know, a sugar high is still a high, and we talked a little bit more, and I thought, I'll bet he could use some solid food in his stomach in addition to the coffee. So I ran into the kitchen just over there. I raided the fridge. I said, what's here? There's like nothing except one apple. So I ran out with the apple and presented it, you know, yada, here you go, get that in you. He had no teeth. I might as well have given him a house brick to eat. And that, I reflecting on it later, was an act of pure self-aggrandizement. I wanted to prove to myself that I was caring and I was kind to the kind of people that seek out churches as a genuine sanctuary, a place where they'll be received and not judged. Warrenilla has since closed, and we don't get that kind of traffic anymore, something I'm a little sad about. Well, since we're human, it's possible to screw up practicing kindness even when you're trying to, just by not paying attention. You may have heard the story about a travel agent's random act of kindness. There was this travel agent that had a really great week, made tons of money. And as you do when you've made tons of money, feeling like a general benevolence to all human beings. So this travel agent who ran the agency is in the office, and she sees an elderly couple peering at the window, you know, looking at trips they can never possibly afford. And she went, you know what? I am going to do a good deed today, because we're definitely in the... And so beckoned them to come in and said, how would you guys like an all-expense-paid cruise to the Pacific Islands, you know, a month? I'll lay it on. It's free. Why? Just because I want to do good for you. And they said, well, sure. So they went. You fast forward a couple of months. The woman's in the travel agency working, and the elderly woman comes in and, you know, says hi and sits down, and the travel agent says, so, how'd you enjoy the trip? And the woman went, oh, your kindness touched me to the soul. Thank you so much. I had the most wonderful time. I just have one question. What's that? Who is that old guy I was supposed to share with? True story. Finally, there are narratives at large in the culture we've internalized and we repeat to ourselves over and over about whether other people actually deserve our kindness or not. Where do we learn such prejudgment? Well, no individual and no institution is immune to the lessons the culture at large teaches us. And our own culture thrives on, it should surprise you not, division, tribalism, competition, and conflict. How many of these stories lead the evening news? Our top story tonight, man gives his own shoes to homeless woman, prevents foot infection, prolongs life. Our top story tonight, passing stranger prevents person's car from becoming rain-soaked by the ingenious use of a plastic bag. Our top story tonight, middle-aged couple leaves struggling waitress unfeasibly large tip in memory of their departed son. Privileged person coughs up the sort of coin you find down the back of the couch to remind needy strangers that generosity still exists. Our top story tonight, rebellious students give away free hug to elderly stranger who hasn't been warmly embraced in decades, changes her life. In our top story tonight, a small church in the eastern suburbs undertakes a friendship mission to a local mosque. Mutual understanding and respect ensues instead of fear and intolerance. Our top story tonight, in today's sudden downpour, an unidentified member of the public used his own umbrella to escort a disabled stranger to shelter. And so on, and so on, and so on. Well, these sort of stories hardly ever make the news on radio, TV, print, or anywhere. And when it does, it's only the little bit at the end, the fine print human interest story that's meant to be an antidote to the blood and crime and mayhem that dominates the rest of the news. Humans mirror and replicate the values they see around them. Does the culture create us, or do we create the culture? Does the media create the culture, or the culture the media? It's a bit of a vicious cycle. It is clear, particularly to media owners, that it's far easier to stimulate emotional responses of division, fear, and loathing in the old brain than it is to engender compassion and connection in the new brain. This they call giving the public what they want. If it bleeds, it leads. If it's sweet, it takes a back seat. So maybe us actually having to work at kindness is not entirely our own personal moral fault. We learn these things. So in our cultural context, opening our hearts to others, all others, any others, can seem really threatening and fraught with the possibilities of error. When I lived in the UK, there was, post-Thatcher, there was homelessness and begging everywhere for a while. This was called care in the community, which meant they closed all the facilities and people went out in the community and the community didn't care. So you ran a kind of gauntlet to get from one place to the other. You ran a gauntlet to get from tube stop to tube stop or from bus stop to bus stop, and you could not allow, there's so many, you couldn't allow yourself to lock eyes with them, engage those mirror neurons that the frontal lobes have and see into their humanity, so you inured yourself to it. And the meme that got generated back then during post-Thatcher to make us all feel better was, they're scamming you. It's part of an organized syndicate. They're not on the level. They're not really homeless. They're not really needy. They just don't want to work. And it's amazing how that assumption takes root because it lets you off the hook. These human souls become outdoor furniture, just like the shrubs and the lampposts and the waste baskets along the sidewalk, not fellow beings you could easily see yourself in. And even recently, when I was studying in Manchester, walking past such folk without thinking one day, not paying attention, I passed that meme, to my shame, like a virus to a friend and colleague who had an inner city congregation. Fortunately, her immune system was better than mine. And she said, well, look, maybe that's true. Maybe they are just running some sort of scam. But dude, they're still doing it by begging for coins in the street. Talk about not seeing what's right in front of you. Not paying attention. How often we tell ourselves that kindness is weakness, Nobody wants to be a fool or be taken advantage of, betrayed by their own instincts for compassion and connection. But is being a fool worse than maintaining that sense of a separate self, the hard, defensive heart, and reinforcing our baser, more primitive nature? That's a rhetorical question. Last week, I asked you to think of a time when you were personally on the receiving end of the kindness of a stranger in such a way that it awakened your heart and you'll never forget it. This week, the share is a little riskier. I'd like you to think of someone, you may not even know their name, whom you had the opportunity to offer kindness to but didn't, and now really wish you had. So if you have such an anecdote, come up and light a candle for them and tell us briefly, please, about it, because time is a factor. Or you can just light a candle. That was for Warwick, who was looking for kindness on our bench. Had I but paid attention to him rather than my own desperate need to feel like a good person, I'd have spared him the indignity of not being able to eat an apple. The indignity in that was all mine. Over to you.
As I travel around the city and the suburbs, often through cities in the different squares, Light Square, Whitmore Square, I'll see different groups of people congregating there, and I'm sure some of them don't have their own homes to go to. But I still ride past, and I don't always say g'day. In fact, I haven't yet. So that's something that I would like to change.
I really don't want to tell you this, but I'm going to. On several occasions, I've walked down Rundle Street and turned in to go to the movies. Love the movies. And there's this guy sitting outside on the corner. He's there nearly all the time. And I haven't given him any money because by his side is a packet of cigarettes.
I took a trip to India about 2 years ago. And you can imagine how many people were lining the streets every day. And you could see in their eyes desperation and hopelessness and a total vacancy. And I pretty much every day saw that look and saw the hopelessness of even giving them 10 rupees to go buy a chai. And every day I passed up an opportunity to, one, really look at them, and to do something about their position in that moment.
Some years ago, I found a boat that would take me across from across to an island off East Timor, and I asked the bloke what time he left, and he said 4 o'clock. And I said, "What for?" He said, "Well, what time?" I said, 9. So I arrived at 9. The boat was full of people who had waited since 4. The pre-dawn quiet of the sea had gone. We had probably a dangerous and extremely uncomfortable crossing, and I had spoiled everybody's weekend.
I recently accidentally contacted an old friend that I knew from when I used to live in Sydney, so we hadn't spoken for many years, just by text message, and I was really excited to hear from him, and we did a text message back and forth, and he told me that life has been really hard and mental health hasn't been good at all. And I had this sinking pit in my stomach from hearing all the stories and kind of how he'd gone downhill. And so I just judged myself too busy at that moment to respond. And then I just haven't, actually. And the truth is, I've thought a lot about him but he doesn't know that. So, yeah, so I think it's time to get in touch.
Well, I'm sure many of us can think of instances in our own lives when we had the opportunity to offer a word, a gesture of kindness, but maybe just didn't act on it for whatever reason appeared to us at the moment. You could see the things that have been shared. You could see the things that have been shared as failures and a fresh excuse to assume that all that what we're doing this month is futility. But if you keep trying, through practice, you get better at noticing and thus seeing fresh opportunities for kindness every day. And therefore, no act of kindness need be utterly wasted. You may not change the world right away, but practiced often and by degrees, practicing kindness can certainly change you. And since we know kindness is viral, our world is one world. What touches one affects us all, and thus loops back to you. I want you to perhaps abandon, just for 5 minutes, your usual posse, the people you usually sit with, in groups of three or four, so that no one is left out. Discuss how you're going with this practice, or if you haven't chosen a practice yet, what you might choose. Seek advice, give encouragement, and I'm going to have new proper silicone wristbands coming around today, so I'll make sure the ushers get them to you and you can have one. So take about 5 minutes, hook up with three or four others, and just have this little chat about how it's going. How your practice is going, what you might try if you haven't chosen one. Okay, all right, we've had a little time to buzz and to share ideas about practice, or maybe a report on how we're doing, or maybe we've had a chance to encourage each other. That's excellent. In the little bit of time we have left, you can't get, this is the problem with Unitarians. They just anyway. I would hope that someone heard or told an anecdote about their practice or about their intention for a practice that might be encouraging for others to take up this practice or to refocus on it. Has anyone, feel free to dob in one you heard. Has anyone heard an encouraging report about how this is going for someone? Don't be shy. I'll come around with the mic. No encouraging anecdotes to share. There we go. Test.
Oh, great. So there's a few words of encouragement from Jenny. First of all, she's been away for 2 weeks in Surfers Paradise and came back and looked at the list and just went, oh, actually, tick, I do this and tick, I do that. And how, like, what a nice reflection that a lot of these practices are things that she's been working through for many years, and that, there's only a few that she could kind of work on. And the other story that she told me is there's a lady who feeds the pigeons on Morfitt Road. So what Jenny likes to do is every 6 months or so she'll draw like a little letter from the pigeon and put it in her mailbox, or sometimes she's left her chocolates or flowers, just a little surprise every now and again. And show of encouragement. I thought that was really lovely.
Thank you. I'm doing number 8. I chose that one because we've got we're getting renovations done, so there's like this conga line of tradesmen coming through the house. I've just sort of thought, okay, look, these guys are in my home. I'm going to coffee in the morning, tea in the afternoon, cakes, snacks, just whatever they need, whatever they need. And finally the foreman came up to me at the end of one of the shifts and went, "Dude, no one does this. What's wrong? Are you a church minister?" Discovered. As a final way to help in your commitment to your practice of kindness this run-up to Easter, you are given a little daily affirmation to take with you to say, as you begin your days over the next few weeks, let us read it together as one voice. Shall we? "Today, I am fortunate to have woken up. I am alive. I have a precious human life. I am not going to waste it. I'm going to use my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to benefit all living beings. I am going to have kind thoughts towards others. I will not fear them or think ill of them. I will benefit others as much as I can. May I have the strength of intention and the clarity of mind to make this so. This I affirm with all my being. This I affirm with all my being is what the word amen means, by the way. Next week, we'll talk more, encourage you more, and we'll do more sharing. In the meantime, do what you can, where you are, with what you have at your disposal. Spread the virus of kindness like seed, and a rich harvest will, must flow back to you. Amen.
Rob McPherson's addresses are his intellectual property. They may only be used by other preachers if his permission is sought and expressed, acknowledgement is given that they are his work, and the addresses are used in their entirety. To seek his permission, email Rob at unitarianessay@bigpond.com.
That's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons. This is White Rabbit, out.